Okay, to start off, we'd like to have a shout out to Mike Green from Moshe Polstein. Have a good Shabbos. Okay, here we go. Parsha Shlach. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Shlach lecha anoshim yesuru eretz Kanaan asher ani nosen levnei Yisrael. Isha chod. Lamate avosav tishlachu. Kol nosivan. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, send for yourself men, and they will spy out the land of Canaan that I am giving over to Bnei Yisrael. One man per shevet. One man per shevet will be sent out. Everybody will be a nasi. Everybody will be a nothing. So Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and sent it out. So we see very clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and said, I want to send out people. And it was very clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying it out loud, right? Moshe Rabbeinu later on in Parshas Devarim says, "Vayitav be'enai adover." The thing was very good to me. I thought it was a good idea to send out Meraglim, to send out these spies. Which means that not only HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought it was a good idea, Moshe Rabbeinu himself thought it was a great idea to send out spies. Later on, we see that when they went to a place called Ya'azer, later on in Bamidbor, they send out spies again. They do send out spies to spy out Ya'azer, and it worked. In Yoshua, they sent out spies to go check out Yericho. It was Pinchas and Kalev. Kalev went a second time. And again, it worked out well. Spies seems to be a normal thing to do. So what happened over here with these Meraglim that the Meraglim messed it up? What happened over here? And plus, Moshe Rabbeinu told them what to do. Tell us what the land is like. Did you expect them to lie? Did you expect them to say something that wasn't true? There was a lack of emunah. There would have been a lack of emunah. If you're going to say, well, they didn't have any emunah that Kadosh Baruch Hu would be able to beat it. But then why did Moshe Rabbeinu ask them to go in the first place? Moshe Rabbeinu should have said, you know what? We don't have to spy out anything. Let's just go follow the clouds and go straight inside Eretz Yisrael, and everything should have been perfectly fine. Follow the clouds. The clouds are taking you into Eretz Yisrael. Just listen to them. Why in the world did they think to themselves, you know what? I got to do this. I got to do that. I have to check out this. I have to check out that. Tell me if they're fortified cities or non-walled cities. Tell me what there's going to be. Why do you have to do that? Okay, so lots of things happened in last week's parsha. We went through some of them last week, but lots of things happened over there. Yisro left Klal Yisrael. We know Yisro left Klal Yisrael. That was a very obvious thing. People complained. Eldad and Medad came out and prophesied. They made a nevuah and said that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die. That Moshe was going to die. And then he told them, Moshe makes Yoshua Machnes. Yoshua was going to bring everybody inside. And finally, at the end of the parsha, Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, and Miriam got Saras. When they heard all this, they started thinking to themselves, what in the world is going on? They had the perfect spy. The perfect spy was Yisro. V'yasuru. The word V'yasuru is the same words as V'yisro. Yisro was supposed to be the spy to go inside Eretz Canaan and go check out everything inside there and take care of everything for Klal Yisrael. He was supposed to go inside, take care of everything, and come back to Bnei Yisrael and tell them what was going on. It was a major issue. It was a major issue. Yisro wasn't Jewish. If people would have seen him go by, they wouldn't have realized he was spying out for Bnei Yisrael, and they would have all been happy. If a Jew goes in, the guy's wearing Jewish clothing, he's wearing a kippah, he looks obviously like a Jew, he's got a big nose, people look at him and say, this guy is obviously spying it out for these Jews, and they would kill him. It's obvious why they wanted a spy, but they didn't want to take somebody like a regular Jew. They should have taken somebody like Yisro. So when Yisro left all of Bnei Yisrael, they were in trouble now. They started thinking to themselves, what's going on? And we know what happened. They complained. They started thinking to themselves, you know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is starting to punish them. And Yisro knows what Eretz Yisrael is really like, what Eretz Canaan is really like. And he doesn't want to go inside because he knows what it's going to be like when we get there. And there's going to be something wrong. We're going to lose out on some stuff. And Bnei Yisrael started thinking to themselves, maybe it's better to be out here in the Midbar. Maybe it's better for us to stay out here and not to go into Eretz Yisrael, into Eretz Canaan with all the great things that are going on there, because we've got great lives right now. We've got great lives. We've got everything that we need. And if we're not going to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu fully with us, if we're not going to have the Nisim and the Nisim Gluyim of Hashem, because Moshe is not going to be there, it's going to be Yoshua, and Yoshua is untested, unproven. The only war that he fought against Amalek, he didn't kill anyone. He weakened Amalek. He never killed anyone. It's somebody that's untested, unproven, untried. That type of a person is going to bring us inside Eretz Yisrael. That's not worth it, said Bnei Yisrael. We're not going to be able to beat them b'teva. We're not going to be able to beat them naturally. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu got upset. You just accepted the prophecy without trying to fight it? Instead of saying, Moshe's gone, what are we going to do? You should have davened to Hashem and you should have said, you know what? We're not going to be able to do it without Moshe. You should have davened to me. You should have said to me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, Hashem, don't let Moshe die. Because if Moshe dies, there's no way we're going to make it inside Eretz Yisrael. That was one of the big problems. The Satan started accusing Bnei Yisrael for terrible things.
if Hashem said that Moshe should die, the leader, the holiest person of all of them, they're not at that point. They're not going to argue because it obviously has to be a good reason.
They didn't argue about Moshe Rabbeinu dying, but they did argue about their ability to beat massive giants inside a land when they don't have Moshe Rabbeinu there.
Plus, they can't be blamed for miraculing because.
Wait, we just answered the first question, so there's no plus. It's minus now. Question number two.
Minus.
Yes.
The sin that the Jerusalem, it was also partly because they were spoiled. They were spoiled by Hashem.
I don't know where you got that from. That happens to be a true statement, but that's not has nothing to do with the Meraglim. Meraglim has nothing to do with being spoiled by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. At least not just yet.
They're going to look at all the bad things when they see it, and they're going to have not a Munah Hashem because.
I don't like this, I guarantee. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises you a land and tells you it's the best land and there's not going to be any problems, tells you I'm going to fight the wars and all these people are going to die. You have a question?
If he's giving me the best life now, I'd be like, why? I'm fine now.
The way you just asked your question. I'm sorry to get into a philosophical debate with you, Moshe, but the way you just asked your question, if they knew that Hashem was all for the good for everybody, then Moshe Rabbeinu dying was for the good for everybody. So if they knew that Kadosh Baruch Hu was sending the Eretz Canaan, then they knew that this is for the best for everybody. So why would they complain about one thing and not the other?
It's like you offer me a steak.
No, hold on. There is no philosophy. Hold on. Yeah, I just beat you. We just beat you. Let's go down to the next part over here. Here we go. At the end of last week's parsha, now we're going to talk about why this whole thing happened. Why HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Now, you think about it. Shlach lecha anashim. Anybody remember what Rashi says on this? Lecha. Send for yourself men. What does Rashi say? Lecha. Litovascha ulanascha. What does that mean? Send for yourself men. Why? For what?
Good.
For your own good. And lanascha. For your own benefit, right? Do it for your own good and for your own benefit. Do it for yourselves. It's Rashi. Why in the world were they doing it for themselves? And it's strange, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like he's saying to Moshe, I'm not suggesting for you to do it. But if you do it, then go ahead and send these people. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling them? So listen to this. Rashi says that they messed up. Why did they mess up? Because they didn't learn from the Meraglim. They didn't learn from the Meraglim. They didn't learn from Miriam. Miriam lied. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara. She said something terrible about Moshe Rabbeinu. What happened to Miriam? She got saras. She immediately got punished. The Meraglim should have seen that and should have said, if I speak Lashon Hara, then I'm also going to get saras. But they didn't learn from it. What's the pshat behind that? Listen to this pshat. It's the most unbelievable pshat in the world. The Chassam Sofer says the following. Absolutely unbelievable. Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, let's put it this way. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron didn't get inside Eretz Yisrael. They weren't buried inside Eretz Yisrael. Why weren't they buried inside Eretz Yisrael?
Why weren't they buried inside Eretz Yisrael?
Stupid Mei Meriva. Because they hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. And when they hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, they ended up staying out of Eretz Yisrael. It's number one. Number two, what about Miriam? Miriam also didn't get inside Eretz Yisrael. She was buried outside of Eretz Yisrael. My question that I posed to two very big gedolim, Rav Shmuel Orbach and Rav Chaim Knievsky, was why in the world did Miriam not merit to be buried inside Eretz Yisrael? She had to die? That question is mentioned by Chazal. Why wasn't she buried inside Eretz Yisrael? Nowhere in Chazal does it say anything about it. Rav Shmuel Orbach said, he said to bring him a midrash rabbah doesn't say a thing. I went to Rav Chaim, when I asked Rav Chaim the question, Rav Chaim said he would write to me later. He wrote me the letter later. He said, Eni Odea. Now those are the two things that we had. So I decided I'm going to really look up this thing. I finally found a Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says the following. Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam all were involved in the Isser of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is spoken by somebody, accepted by somebody, and talked about someone. Chazal say in the Gemara, I believe it's in Erchin, says three people die because of Lashon Hara. The one who says it, the one who hears it, and the one who it's spoken about. That lesson is being learned from Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam. Miriam spoke it, Aaron accepted it, and Moshe was spoken about, and all three of them died from the sin, says the Chassam Sofer, a massive chiddush. That's what caused Miriam to not be buried inside Eretz Yisrael. From that Lashon Hara that she spoke caused her to not be buried inside Eretz Yisrael. From that, we see a tremendous thing. There was one chance for a tikkun. One chance for a tikkun for Miriam to be brought inside Eretz Yisrael. What was that one chance? Where was that tikkun possible? If the Lashon Hara of Miriam would have taught everybody a lesson, and they would have learned a lesson, they would have said to themselves, we should no longer speak Lashon Hara. Because Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, what happened to her? She got saras and she's kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. So what would happen to us if we speak Lashon Hara? We're going to be kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, we're going to be punished, we're going to be kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. So the Meraglim should have said to themselves, let's not speak Lashon Hara. They had a chance to learn a lesson, and they didn't do it. Moshe Rabbeinu knew there was a very good chance that the Meraglim were going to mess up. Such a good chance that he added on a Yud to Yeshua's name. Because he knew that if the Meraglim did something well, and they didn't speak Lashon Hara, then that means everybody would go inside Eretz Yisrael. That would be Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron would all go inside Eretz Yisrael 3 days later. So the Satan knew this, and the Satan was going to be all out trying to destroy the Meraglim and not let them go inside Eretz Yisrael. So the Satan was there, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew that, and tried to stop them by doing everything he could to make sure it didn't happen, but he needed to take a chance. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to get a chance to go inside Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu? You want a chance for Miriam to go inside Eretz Yisrael? Shlach lecha anashim. Send for yourself, people. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to get inside Eretz Yisrael with Miriam and everything. Take the chance and send the Meraglim. There is a chance that Bnei Yisrael is going to be messed over from it. There's a chance that something bad is going to happen. But on the off chance, if you do it well, and they end up not speaking Lashon Hara, then you just improved everything for Klal Yisrael. Everything will be great for Klal Yisrael. There will be tremendous things happening, and you, Aaron and Miriam, will bring them in. The third base of Mikdash will immediately be built, and everything will be good for Klal Yisrael for the rest of their lives. If you do it correctly, it'll be a chance that it'll work. If you want to take that chance, you can go ahead. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu thought like this. For myself, yes, Mikdash Shem Koni Yodecha from Az Yasher.
The first one would have lasted.
No. The third base of Mikdash, which is from Shemayim, would have been brought down and would have been built immediately. There wouldn't have been a first and second base of Mikdash made by human beings. No. That would have been the third base of Mikdash, which is the one in Shemayim.
It's a big chance, and it didn't pay off.
It is. It's a big chance, but that was the tikkun, and that's why Shlach Lecha Anash and Moshe Rabbeinu was a chance. Moshe said, for myself, I'm not going to do it. But for Miriam to enter Klal Yisrael, for Miriam to enter Eretz Yisrael, I mean, for Miriam to be able to go inside there, I'm willing to take that chance, and that's Litovasko Lanosko. That was the idea, but he had to take one big thing in order for it to happen. He had to take one big thing. What he did was, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. There's four major issues with these psukim. Number one, it says lemate avosav, and as we go on, it says lemate Ruvain, lemate Shimon, lemate Yuda, and goes through the names of every single one of the people that represented the shevet. Why say the word lemate? Shouldn't it be the word leshevet for the shevet of, and go on like that? Number two,
like a couple that doesn't say lemate.
No, every single one says the word lemate. Number one. Number two, it should say the word. It says the word rush. B'nei Yisrael Hema. Roshay B'nei Yisrael. The heads of B'nei Yisrael. Why not say the word Alfei B'nei Yisrael? Why not say the word Roshay Yisrael? Why say those words Roshay B'nei Yisrael? Ish Echad Bashavet. One man doubled up. Why double up those words? Ish Echad. And number four, Yoshua. What is going on with adding on the letter Yud to Yoshua's name and not to any other Shevet? He doesn't do it to anybody else. For Yoshua, he says, add on a Yud. What was happening over here? It stems from the Arizal. Everybody mentions it. The Arizal says, Moshe asked for help from the Shvatim, the Shivtei Kah. He called on Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, and Binyamin. Guys, help us out. We want to go inside Eretz Yisrael. We need a chance to go inside Eretz Yisrael. Be misgalgal yourselves. Come back through your neshamos and enter inside these Meraglim's bodies. Enter inside these people's bodies and bring yourself within them to help them out to be able to make sure that they say the right things. Reuven went to the Mate of Reuven, got Shamua ben Zakur. Shamua ben Zakur was Reuven with Shamua ben Zakur. Shimon was with Shafet ben Chori. Yehuda was with Kaleb ben Yefuna, and all the way through. That's why it says Ishachad, Ishachad. One man, because not only was it the Nasi, but also was the head of the Shevet itself. That's Rashi b'nei Yisrael Hema. The sons of Yaakov Avinu are the ones that came with. That's also Lemate, as opposed to the Shevet. It's actual Lemate. And number four, Yoshua. We'll get to Yoshua in a second, yeah?
Why do you need all Shvatim to be there? Why not just like one or two? What do you need all of them for?
Every single one was going to be with every single one of the Meraglim. If you didn't have it, then each Meragel was going to say something different. They needed a chance to improve, and each one needed their Shevet to be there, the head of their Shevet to be there, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And even with that, it didn't work. But they still wanted them there in order for them to help out. Yoshua was a massive issue. Yoshua was a massive issue. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid. Where would Yosef go? And Yosef is another little bit of a chance that he was going to speak Lashon Hara. Why? Because Yosef has spoken Lashon Hara before. So Yosef, who's he going to be with? So if you notice in the Psukim, it says, Lamate Ephraim Hoshea ben Nun, Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. Yosef went with Menashe. What Moshe Rabbeinu made sure is that Yosef's neshama would go to Menashe and not Ephraim. Who would Ephraim get? Ephraim would get Levi. Why? Because we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu was from Shevet Levi. Who was going to represent Shevet Levi? There was no Shevet Levi in the Meraglim. There was no Shevet Levi. So who's going to represent Moshe Rabbeinu? What Moshe Rabbeinu did then was he went ahead and he took a Yud and he put it on Yoshua's name. The Yud stands for the Maaser of Hashem, the 10th Shevet, the 10th, the tithe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed out of the Shvatim, which is known as Levi. That Levi was given as the Maaser of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you know how that works with the Rabbeinu Bachaya, good. If you don't, it's not important for now. That Reuven, that the four Bechoros of Reuven, Yosef, Dan, and Gad were all Bechoros and not included in the count. There's really only 8 Shvatim. Shimon was 9, Levi was 10, and that counts as the Maaser, as the Shvatim from Yaakovinu. That's Rabbeinu Bachaya and Vayigash, and it's complicated. Let's not go through that right now. But Levi is the one. That Yud represented Shevet Levi, and therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu made sure that Yoshua got Shevet Levi. Why Yoshua? Because Yoshua was the Talmud Muvak of Moshe Rabbeinu. When you're a Talmud of a Rebbe, what happens to you? The Pasuk says, Ki ilu yeladu. It's as if you were born from that person. You were as if you were born from that Rebbe. It's as if you were born from that person. If that's true, then it was like Yoshua was a son of Moshe Rabbeinu. That makes him as if he's from Shevet Levi. So it makes sense that he's from Shevet Levi. And if you look at the Pasuk, the wording of the Pasuk, Vayikra Moshe Lo Shea Ben Nun Yoshua, the first letters of that Pasuk is Ben Mi Levi. Vayikra Moshe Lo Shea Ben Nun Yoshua, first letters is Ben Mi Levi. He was a son from Levi, and because of that, he ended up getting Levi's neshama, and he was able to be there. Now there was an issue with this. And the issue was the following. Kalev had a major issue. Kalev is the only person of the Shvatim that went to, anybody know from the Psukim? Chevron. Why did he go to Chevron? To lie down on the Kibur Avos. Why? Because Kalev was afraid about himself. Ruach Acheres Hoysabo. He had another Ruach inside him. At first he acted like the Meraglim, but then he changed when he came down with all of Bnei Yisrael. Why did he change? Because he didn't have the strength to survive. Because Yehuda, his Shevet, was still in Chevron. Yehuda wasn't taken out of Cherem until the 40th year of the Midbar. That's when his bones were taken out of Cherem. And if he was in Cherem, his strength wasn't all there with Kalev. And because of that, Kalev was afraid. I don't have enough power to be able to fight the Meraglim. What am I going to do? See, went all the way to Maris Machpelah, and he lied down in the Kibri Avos, and he davened to the Avos and said, please don't let me be like the other Meraglim. I don't want to be like them. Please give me some other help. And Eliezer Eved Avram went with Kalev, and his neshama entered inside Kalev to help out with Kalev and with the original neshama of Yehuda in order to help out Kalev and make sure that he didn't go the other side. But the other Shvatim, it apparently didn't help. What happened? Vayelchu vayavo. They went away, those neshamos. Vayavo, when these people came by themselves. Because these people had so much tumah inside them. So much wrong with them. So much lashon hara that they wanted to say. Even the Shvatim Shvatim couldn't help them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu said there's a better chance if we give them the Shvatim. But even then it wasn't enough. And Reuven, Shimon, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, Binyamin all had to fly up to Shemayim. So we can't be with these people. They're so tummy, we couldn't be there. The greatest of Klal Yisrael, and it still wasn't enough for them to be able to be saved. An unbelievable thing. And that's why it says at the very end, B'chayu min ha'anashim. Yoshua and Kalev lived from those people. They kept those neshamas within them. Yoshua kept Shevet Levi within him. And Kalev kept Shevet Yehuda inside him and kept Eliezer Eved Avram inside him. They were able to keep these neshamas that they were always up there on high. But we got to ask ourselves a question before I get your question. We got to ask ourselves, why was it so bad? How did these people who were Nesiim in Klal Yisrael, leaders of Klal Yisrael, how did they get down so far that they were able to sin that badly? Yeah.
I thought Moshe redeemed the Shama at Matan Torah.
No, that was in the 40th year of the Midbar. Makos, Yud Aleph on the base. Check out the Gemara. It said during his bracha. Yehuda Yadcha Ba'orifaydecha, etc., etc. But either way, so why Moshe? How is this something so powerful? What happened over here? Anybody know the last words of the part? Last words before Rishon? Last words before Rishon ends, I should say. So last words that we read on Monday and Thursday? No. Ba'ayomim Yemei Bikurei Anavim. What do those words mean? Those days were days of the harvesting of the grapes. Bikurei Anavim. Unbelievable gra and unbelievable nitzutzei shimshon. The gra says, Vayomim yamei bikurei anavim. The last letters of the words are mem, yud, yud, mem. Mem, yud, yud, mem in gematria is altogether
100
is the gematria of Sam. The Satan. Sam Kel. The Satan. And his name, when it comes to his malach name, his name as an angel is Sam. That name is right there, Vayomim yamei bikurei anavim. And says in the Shemshon, listen to this. Take Bikurei Anavim. The letters before Anavim. The letters before. What's the letter before a Beis? Aleph. What's the letter before a Nun? What's the letters before and I should say it again, I'm sorry. Ayin and Nun. An Ayin and a Nun. I'm sorry, I should have said this better. An Ayin and a Nun is a Samach and a Mem. The letter before a Beis is an Aleph. And the letter before a Mem is a Lamed. Samkel. Samkel, Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. The name of the Satan. These days were the days of the Satan. You know why these days were the days of the Satan? Because the 3 weeks were involved. It was in between Shiva Sivatamuz and Tisha B'Av. When they come back, and Tisha B'Av. How many days were they gone for?
40
days altogether. How many days are there in the 3 weeks?
21,
right? The majority of the days were Tamei days. And because the majority of the days were Tamei days, they got brought down by those majority of the days. But now it goes to a question on Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu send them if the majority of days that they were going to be gone for were days of Tuma? Why would he have done that? These are the days, those 3 weeks are when the Satan is the strongest. Those are the days in the middle of the summer when guys go to the beach, when guys go ahead and do things that are, they see people that are on the street and girls are not wearing any clothes and they're forgetting to do this and forgetting to do that. It's the time of Ben Hazmanim, those 3 weeks. Those times are the worst times for Klal Yisrael. Why in the world would you send anyone during those days to go inside Eretz Yisrael and spy them out? Of course the Satan's going to get a hold of them. What in the world is Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? Because Moshe Rabbeinu thought that these Shvatim, that these Nesiim, were going to be Moser Nefesh. How long of a place, how long of a trip was it? 40 days. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is 400 parsas long. How many parsas can you walk in a day? 10 parsas a day. 10 parsas a day. It's about 25 miles a day. 10 parsas times 40 days is 400 parsas. So they thought that they were going to be able to go. But the problem was Moshe Rabbeinu thought they would be Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. They weren't going to spend 40 days walking. They would walk day and night. They'd walk day and night to be able to finish their mission, run back to Klal Yisrael and say, everything's awesome there. And they'd come back and they'd immediately go in. How many days would it take if they walked day and night throughout 400 parsas? 20 days altogether. And then, okay, they'd be there for Shivas Batamus, but at least they'd be gone for 19 of 20, or 20 of the days of the 3 weeks. They wouldn't be there for those days. They'd have a couple days of Tuma, but at least they wouldn't have the majority of Tuma. He figured they'd have 18 good days and 2 bad days, and that's fine. But to have the majority of days, that'll never happen, because these people people wouldn't let that happen. But the Meraglim got scared. They saw the giants. They freaked out. They said, we don't want to be here. And they only walked at night. They refused to walk during the day. And therefore, instead of a 20-day trip, it ended up being a 40-day trip. And they came back on Tisha B'Av. And they came back on Tisha B'Av when the Satan is the strongest, where the Tumah is the highest.
Isn't that a good thing that they only walked during the night when there's no one out?
They should have done both. They should have walked during the day as well. Not be afraid of anybody at all. Don't be afraid of anyone. What are you afraid of? You think these giants are really going to be able to hurt you? What's wrong with you? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. But they refused to do it. They refused to do it. And because of that, they ended up getting nailed by the Satan. The Satan started accusing them, and all of a sudden they went down. That's what it means in Pasuk Gimel. Rashi says, Be'osa Shah Ksherim are you. At that time, they were kosher. At that time, in that month, when he sent them, they were good. But when Tammuz and Av rolled around, then the problems started popping up. Because most of those days are Tamei days. That's when the issues started popping up. And that's when all these problems started kicking in, and they started saying, oh my gosh, now the Sultan's going to get involved. We should know, by the way, what happened on Shiva Asa v'Tammuz? The year before. A year earlier, what happened on Shiva Asa v'Tammuz? The Luchos broke. Egel Azov. The Egel Azov. The Egel Azov happened a year earlier, exactly on Shiva Asa v'Tammuz. That day was right the turnaround point. That was the middle of the 20 days. The Tumah of the Satan got to them so strong. So strong. And you should notice, by the way, there's connections between the two. Originally it said, Asher Yehu Lefaninu. Over there they said, Nitna Rosh Venashuva LeMitzrayim. Let's make a Rosh. The Rosh is the same letters as Asher. He says, Halucha Meret Mitzrayim by the Ego. This is the God that brought you out of Mitzrayim. Over there they said, Venashuva Mitzrayim. Let's go back to Mitzrayim. Before it was 40 days until they got to the Ego Azov. How long were the Meraglim for? How long did they walk for? 40 days. There's huge connections between the Egel Azov and what was going on over here with the Meraglim. But they had some major excuses. You want to hear some of the excuses they had? Number one, we don't want to give up Moshe Rabbeinu. The Meraglim thought to themselves, and this is what the Satan does, and don't tell me he doesn't do it to you. When the Satan gets up there and he says, he gives you a great excuse. You're getting up for the 7:15 minute, you're waking up, you wake up at 6:45 in the morning, and you sit there, and the Satan looks at you and says, if you want to learn better, you're going to have to sleep for another 15 minutes. He's like, no, I'm good. I think I got enough sleep last night. I'll be fine. I'm going to be perfectly fine. Something like, I'm telling you, I remember what you're like when you get up at 6:45. I know what you're like when you get up at 7. I say, just get up at 7 and you'll be okay. No, I'm going to be fine. All right. Every day. And you go back to sleep. Something is unbelievable making an excuse, but not just some excuse. An excuse that you think is the best excuse you've ever heard of before in your life. An excuse that you look there and you're like, this is the greatest idea I've ever heard before in my life. He says, so look, you got to look at that billboard. You got to look at that billboard because you got to see what they're selling. You never know. Maybe, you know what? You got to see where the Tumah is in order to tell other people. You can come back and say, don't go that way because that place is full of Tumah. But you got to go on this Tumah path. You got to go there. When you go to the Concord, you got to be able to look up and say, like, yeah, it is a Tumah sign up there. It is a Tumah sign up there. You have to be able to look in order to see it. Otherwise, you'll never know. Otherwise, you will never know. How are you supposed to be there if you don't know? It's an unbelievable idea that they said to themselves. Here we go. Ready? Number one, the Teferis Yonas and Rabbi Yonas and Eifshit said, the way they referred to it was, why should we lose Moshe Rabbeinu as a Rebbe? Moshe Rabbeinu is our Rebbe. We want Moshe Rabbeinu as our Rebbe. We know that if we go inside Eretz Yisrael, we're going to lose him as our Rebbe. He's going to die. Why should we lose Moshe Rabbeinu as a Rebbe? So they sat there and they said, we don't want to lose Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, we're doing it for you, Moshe. We're doing this for you. That's what Moshe Meitzel Shua Machzis is. We started off the whole shir with, thank you for paying attention, but they knew from Elden and Meda. So they knew. So that's number one. Number two, the Sfas Emes. They were living the life. Look at their lives. They didn't have to work for food, they got money. They didn't have to work for water. They got water from May Miriam. They didn't have to walk around. They had clouds carrying them around. All they did was learn all day long. They learned all day. What's going to happen if they go inside Eretz Yisrael? They have to work the fields. They have to do this to make money. They have to do that to make money. They don't want to have to work. They don't have to go out there and make money. That's not what they're there for. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we'd rather stay in the Midbar. We'd rather to stay with you. And Hashem said to them, you know what? You're right. I overheard somebody saying, a major, major Zionistic guy, I'm sure if you think about it, you'll know who I'm talking about, said that was the sin of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, that they wanted to stay in the desert. They wanted to stay in the desert, and they didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem punished them. Because they should have gone to Eretz Yisrael. You know what I said to them? I said to them, I looked up, and I'm like, then why did he punish them by keeping them in the Midbar for another 39 years? According to that, that wouldn't be a punishment. That's exactly what they wanted. That's exactly what they asked for. Why were they out in the Midbar? They said, we want to stay here. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to them, you should have gone to Eretz Yisrael. For that, I'm keeping you in the Midbar for 39 years. Oh, what a slap on the wrist. Wow. I feel bad about that. It's an unbelievable pella that a Kadosh Baruch Hu said to them, I know what you're thinking, and I know what your idea is. You want to stay in the Midbar for 39 years? It's a great idea. You can sit and learn for another 39 years in a spiritual world. But you know what? You should have listened to me. It has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. They died eventually. Didn't make a difference. They got what they asked for. They wanted to stay in the Midbar, and they got what they asked for.
Every year digging your own grave and lying face down.
Hold on. You're missing the point. They got what they asked for. They did not say that we want to live for 100 years. They didn't say we want to live another 700. They're not guaranteed any life. All they said was, we want to stay in the Midbar, and they got that wish. It's an unbelievable line over here. That's the Sfas Emes. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld has the best line, though. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld says, they saw, he's the Rav Yerushalayim at the turn of the century.
The
Sfas Emes was the one beforehand. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld said, the Meraglim saw with their Ruach HaKodesh the secular Zionists that were going to come up later. They said, we don't have to keep mitzvos as long as we have the land. And they said, such tuma just because of the land, it's better that we don't go into the land at all and we stay in the Midbar for the rest of our lives. All because of the secular Zionists that are going to come around later on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I love Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. He's absolutely unbelievable. Number three, my line, my chiddush, my idea is like this. What did they bring back from Eretz Yisrael? Massive grapes. How big they were, 960 saw. I did a cheshbon once. I believe the number is, I'll tell you very quickly, 16,320 pound grapes. That's how heavy these grapes were. I did a whole thing of how big they were. No, the cluster altogether. So you know what the pshat is? My pshat is that they said, do you see what kind of potential we have if you go inside Eretz Yisrael? We're so used to spirituality. We go inside a land with these grapes, all you do is take one grape, we'll be drunk as loons in a minute. Drunk as loons, you just take a grape. They'll be drunk. They said, look, we can't go inside Eretz Yisrael. Look at these things. And they told them for good reasons. They got carried away. They said, no, it's too bad. It's this, it's that. Because they wanted to convince the other people that they didn't want to go. They got carried away. But their idea was, listen, we'll be perfectly fine. We'll be perfectly fine if we stay out here in the desert. But if we go there, there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees that we're not going to sin. But there's a final answer, the Stipler. He says it was a problem of gaiva. Now listen to this answer. That the Nesiim wanted to remain Nesiim. And that they knew that if they would go to Eretz Yisrael, each person would be their own person, and everything would be good, and they wouldn't need the Nesiim anymore. The Nesiim wanted to remain Nesiim, so they said, forget it. They had gaiva, and they stayed out there. Now, I never understood that answer. I always said to myself, that's garbage. I'll tell you honestly, that's garbage. It's the Stipler saying it. I mean, this is not Stam a person that's saying it. It's a Gadol B'Yisrael that's saying it. I always said, come on. Gaiva? It's like a Musservort. The Nesiim had gaiva? These people were the greatest of Klal Yisrael, had gaiva? That they said to themselves, we're too proud, we want to be the Nesiim? What in the world does that mean? I understood it now. I understood it after this year. I really think I understand it. When they came to Eretz Canaan, what was the point of going to Eretz Canaan? Anybody think about what does Canaan mean? Okay, Canaan stands for Kol Nedive Amim Nasafu. Kol is the Chaf, Nedive is the Nun, Amim is the people, Nasafu, they gather. The greatest of all the people gather inside Eretz Canaan. What they got, if you notice, you've ever seen how many kings were there in Eretz Canaan? Eretz Canaan is a tiny place. I don't care, 400 parts or 400 parts, it's spiritual more than it is physical. Anybody know how big it is? You know, we're talking about a little tiny area the size of like Rhode Island. In that area, how many kings were there? 31 kings. Mentioned in Yoshua, 31 kings. Kol nedive amim nasafu. All the greatest of all the people around, they all wanted to live in Eretz Canaan, because Eretz Canaan had a type of, it was such a land that it grew powerful, strong people. That was the land that it was like. And they all wanted to be there. The point of sending out the Meraglim, was to take that koach from the other nations and bring it to themselves, so they would add on to those kochos and bring it to Klal Yisrael and bring it over to them, so that when Bnei Yisrael went in, they would be powerful like those 31 kings were powerful. Take on their kochos and use it for Kedusha. But they decided not to. Shlach lecha anoshim v'yasru es Eretz Canaan. The last letters happen to be the word chachamos. They considered themselves wise men. Chachamos. And because they considered themselves wise men, they said to themselves, we don't need this garbage. We don't have to go inside Eretz Canaan and get all this stuff. We'll be fine the way we are. So they told Moshe Rabbeinu, well, we're good and ready. We'll go inside and we'll capture all those Malchei Canaan. We don't need any kochos from them. Moshe Rabbeinu looked at them and said, you don't understand. Those powers are for us for the taking. And because of that, it caused, instead of chachamos, the chacham caused maves, caused death to come in. All because of their gaiva, not thinking that they needed anything else. I'm going to go with one last thing before we go. The mapilim. The mapilim is at the end of the parsha. These mapilim, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you guys are punished, he makes the meraglim's tongues go all the way down to their stomachs. Right? And there's worms that come out and enter inside the body. It's the most disgusting punishment you've ever heard before in your life. Right? The mapilim. These guys get up there and they're like, we're going into Eretz Yisrael anyway. Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, guys, God's not with you. God doesn't want you to go up there. Don't go. They're like, we're going anyway. And they go up there and they get killed by the Amalekim. What a pella. They went inside Eretz Canaan after HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu told them not to. They told them, don't go. And they went anyway. They went anyway. That's the Mapilim. We're like, no, we're going anyway. What in the world are they thinking? They just went in and they said, no, we're not going to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You just got punished for not listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to do that again now? Right now you're going to do it? You just saw a direct punishment to the Meraglim for saying something bad. What are you guys thinking? Listen to this quote from the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You know what Mapilim means? Mapilim means, and I'll give you a Gemara. Shabbos Tzadi Zayinim and Aleph. Shabbos Tzadi Zayinim and Aleph. There's a Machlokas Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yudah ben Beseira. Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, Tzlafchad was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. He was the guy that gathered the wood on Shabbos, and what happened to him? He was killed. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Yudah ben Beseira says, Rabbi Akiva, how could he be motzi lies? How could he say such terrible things about Tzlafchad? Tzlafchad was a tzaddik. How could he say such terrible things about him? Instead, he was one of the Mapilim. He's one of the Mapilim. He's one of these guys that ran into Eretz Canaan after Hashem told them not to. Misera, what's wrong with you? You just said to Rabbi Akiva, don't say anything bad about Tzlafchad. He was a tzaddik. But then you called him a Rasha. You said that he went up against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. How can you do that, Rabbi Yudah ben Beseira? You're saying something that's wrong. How can you do something like that? Rabbi Yudah ben Beseira meant the following. How do you do tshuva? Full tshuva. How do you do tshuva? It's called Ba'oso Makom, Ba'osa Shah, Ba'osa Ish. In that situation, you got to be put in the exact same situation where, for example, let's say I sped. I was speeding on a road. And I got clocked for 55 miles an hour in a 30, let's say. The only way for me to do tshuva gemura in that situation is for me to be in the same situation where I'm in the same hurry, I'm going on the same road without knowing that there was a cop there, and I wouldn't go 55. I would end up going 35 instead, because you can always go 7 miles above the speed limit. That's what I would do instead. I'll go 35 instead of 55. That would be tshuva gemura, to put myself in the same exact situation and go over. Bnei Yisrael knew what their chait was. What was their sin? Their sin was they didn't trust God. God told them, go to Eretz Yisrael, you won't have any issues. You'll go inside, it's a beautiful land. But they didn't trust Him. They said, there's giants there, there's problems there, there's this there, there's that there. They complained. They complained and they argued and they said, we don't trust you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't trust you. There's something wrong with Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to be inside Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to be there. How do you do tshuva? How do you do tshuva? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you not to go, you trust in God so much that you figure you're going to go and God's going to listen to you. Yishmael is a big tikkun. Yishmael is God will listen to us. Our concept is Shmuel. Listen, Hashem. Please hear my pleas. Please hear my prayers. I'm going to daven. Please, Hashem, listen. We don't guarantee that a God's going to listen to us. But the Arab's concept is God will listen to what I'm saying. I can blow myself up, and God's going to bring me inside the great land with a bunch of people there, and we all know, etc. Right? That's what God's going to do for me. That's Yishmael. Yishmael is a tikkun for a guy who didn't listen to God in the first place. If you didn't listen to God, then you have to go up there and you have to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm so much bitachon in you that even when somebody tells me that you're not with me, I still believe you're with me. And I know it's right for me to enter Eretz Canaan. They did tshuva, ba'oso makom, ba'oso azman, ba'oso shah, ba'oso ish. They went there and they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we know that you're telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to go in. But this is our tikkun. This is our way of doing tshuva. By saying to you, no, we have pure trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're going to go inside Eretz Yisrael and we're going to be able to live inside Eretz Yisrael. And even if they die for it, they died after doing tshuva gemura of having pure bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I would have done that, it would be an unbelievable sin of suicide. If somebody else would have done it, it also would have been a pure sin of suicide. You can't kill yourself like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you not to go, you can't go. But because they just didn't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling them to go, and they didn't go, now the tshuva gemura was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them not to go, they would go inside. And because of that, they were tzaddikim gemurim, says the Chasam Sofer. These people ended up getting the highest chelik in Olam Haba for doing tshuva gemura. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra said it wasn't lies to say that Tzofchad was one of the Mapilim. In fact, it was saying that Tzofchad was one of the biggest tzaddikim out there. That he was one of the Mapilim, a guy who trusted in God so much that he believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would save him even when he threw himself into the hands of Amalek. That's an unbelievable level, says the Chasam Sofer. Now that is an unreal thought. It is not something that we can do in our own situations. You got to ask a Rav when you're trying to do Tshuva Gemura. But that's what these guys did, and Tzofchad was the guy for that. That everything was Chad for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll get into Tzlof later. Later on, Tzlof is a caper bush that is all these different types of things, all these different, the berries, the leaves, the branches, they're all edible. Tzlof is Chad. All those things he put together is one that they had Achdus and Klai, so that Tzlof God brought everyone together and said, we're all doing it for our Kaddish Baruch. On top of that, guys, have a good Shabbos.